Next up, we have Sarah Batts, and she is an associate professor of public health and director of risk communication, the Risk Communication Laboratory at Temple University in Philadelphia. Her research focuses on the use of commercial marketing methods in public health decision making. And her talk is about dirty bombs, which should be very interesting. So thank you very much.
Good morning. So what I want to talk a little bit about today is the application of some marketing methods to trying to understand how low literacy groups process information, and especially process information that is either high literacy versus materials that are done at their level. Don't have anything to disclose. So at the Risk Communication Laboratory at Temple, I'm using a variety of different marketing methods. So I'm using a technique called perceptual mapping and vector modeling, which is a way to look at barriers and perceptions of decisions in a three-dimensional model, which helps us develop materials that are very specific to the needs of a population. I'm not going to go into detail on that today, but we did use this technique to develop the materials in this project. And then we're also using some physiological tests to try to understand how people are processing that information. So we're trying to take it through the entire process, which is developing materials that are specific to the needs of those folks, and then not only doing quantitative or qualitative testing of talking to people about their experiences, but then looking at their biophysiological responses to those. And I'm going to talk mostly about eye tracking today show you a little bit about what we found with low literacy populations and how they process that. So the perceptual mapping and vector modeling is used to, as I said, develop these three-dimensional models. And they look like this. So it's a computer program that we've developed. It's a multidimensional scaling process, if anybody's heard of that. And it helps us understand that a group and how to move that group in a three-dimensional space toward whatever that decision is that you're interested in. What it allows us to do is, instead of kind of throwing the kitchen sink at people, which is what we tend to do in public health, right? We think, okay, you need to know everything there is to know about X. What we can do instead is say there might be two or three things that really are going to motivate that person to move toward whatever that decision is in that case. And then the biophysical measures are really a way to process and understand how that material is affecting those folks. So eye tracking and pupil dilation is one way to look at what's the attention that they're having to the desired content. Are they able to read it as we would expect somebody to when they're looking at something? And then we also looked at heart rate variability and skin conductance to try to see, are they having some type of emotional response to that materials. So the eye tracking and biophysiological measures are definitely unique to public health research. They're used a lot in marketing research, right? So they know, you know, when you go into the grocery store and you're looking for a product, eye tracking is used to understand where should we put that product so that you buy it, right? So what I was trying to do was, can we adapt those methods to folks who are looking at public health materials as a way to understand how we can better make those public health materials? So eye tracking analysis in some of these materials certainly monitor physical and psychological experiences, kind of the experience of using a product. And the research in general shows that the odds of kind of effectively motivating folks change if you can increase their positive emotional arousal or response. So this particular project was around the development of a dirty bomb computer-based decision aid for low-literacy adults. Why dirty bombs? Well, that's how I got the funding. So sometimes that's what you do. But I had worked in disaster preparedness for some other kinds of things, and it was an interesting thought, because most of us don't know a lot about dirty bombs. But we are vulnerable, especially in urban populations, and I'm in Philadelphia, to think about, you know, if one occurred, would people know what to do? So the problem itself, the use of chemical or radiological nuclear materials is unfortunately well documented. There have been 21 incidents of actual use or planned use in the last 18 years, and it's estimated that at least 100 small nuclear devices are missing from some of those Eastern Bloc countries alone. The idea behind dirty bombs is that they probably would not cause a lot of damage, the radiation that would be used. They're more a terror idea, and that most people would be, obviously, I think all of us would be, very concerned if a dirty bomb went off. The devices would be used probably... the radiation itself would probably not cause a lot of injuries. What really would be causing injuries is the bomb itself, obviously. But the terror quotient, because there is radiation involved, is still high in the public. So how would the public react if a dirty bomb happened? Well, we don't really know. So, you know, some post hoc analysis of terrorist emergencies, I think the Boston bombings is probably the most relevant here, suggests that most individuals would generally follow government instructions. So if you think about Boston, where everybody stayed in their house for like 48 hours straight while they were trying to look for the folk. But there's certainly significant barriers, especially in these kind of high outrage situations. And a lot of those include, especially in urban populations, pretty high distrust and lack of confidence in the government and public health authorities. And that may be true, especially in those who are living in disadvantaged areas in urban centers with low health literacy. So this particular study had four different phases. We conducted extensive focus groups with low-literacy Philadelphia residents just on their perceptions and knowledge about what dirty bombs were so we could understand what the barriers might be. We then administered a perceptual mapping survey instrument to low-literacy groups to understand exactly what the main things were that we should focus on in a decision aid. The third phase was that we developed a decision aid that was written at a sixth grade or less reading level. And then the fourth phase was that we conducted a small-scale pilot study to try to understand the use of some of these things. So I'm not going to go into detail about perceptual mapping and vector modeling, but I just wanted to show that we did do this. What we found was that we probably needed to focus on the idea of sheltering in place. So for most people, what we found through our focus groups was that when you ask them what they would do if something like this happened, they'd say, we'd get the hell out of town. Right? And that's actually the worst thing that you can do in the case of radiation occurring outside. You need to stay put inside so that, you know, you're not exposed to that radiation. So we really focused on kind of that sheltering in place idea. The result was a computer-based visual presentation that was written at a sixth grade reading level. And what we were trying to do in this pilot study was really, in many ways, assess what's the feasibility of using these measures in these populations with low literacy. Could they, you know, could we use them in a way that would give us results that worked or gave us information about how best to create materials? So the control materials were the frequently asked questions about dirty bombs that was developed by the CDC. As you can see, it's very dense in its information. It uses a lot of big words. You know, it uses the words like radiological often. But this is the material that's available. So if you wanted to get information about dirty bombs, this is pretty much the only thing that's out there. So what we did is we took those frequently asked questions and we basically put each of the questions onto a slide, and then we tried to mirror those questions so that the format was similar in the lower literacy group. So you can see over here is the frequently asked questions from CDC, and on the other side is just to show you kind of a content similar slide of what it would have looked like in the decision aid. Recruitment for this, we got people from a variety of different ways, everything from flyers to word of mouth. We were actually surprised at how well we were able to recruit folks. And we assess literacy either in person using the Realm R, if anyone's ever used that, it's 11 different words, over the phone recruitment was using the SILS, the single item literacy screener, and they had to score a 5 or below on the SILS, and they had to indicate that they had trouble reading medical information on the one. So this is what my lab looks like. This is my really excited intern. She looks really happy about that, doesn't she? But they come in and they would sit. The thing on the head is actually a magnet. It's just, it sits on it, it doesn't hurt at all. And then in the second, you can see down below the computer screen is a camera. The camera senses the magnet, and it's able to find the eye, and then as soon as we have a lock on the eye, then we can measure both their pupil diameter, but also the tracking of their eye. She also, and I don't have a picture of that, would have had sensors put on for heart rate, which were just, you know, two sensors on the arm. It wasn't, you know, they didn't have to do it on their chest or anything like that. So to evaluate this, we used BioInfinity and iNail software programs. We also did a lot of statistical, kind of conventional statistical analysis, but I'm going to focus on some of the eye tracking and biophysical stuff. So the participants, we had 50 folks who came in. They were primarily African American, pretty equal in gender, very low Realm scores. So the average Realm R score was a 2.1. And we would have accepted a 5 or below. So 2.1 means that of the 8 words that are used to assess, they on average were only able to read 2 of them. Average age was about 45, and 32% indicated they had not graduated from high school. So what I want to show you now is just a sample of some of the eye tracking that we saw in these and to show you the difference. So this is the intervention slide on what to do about your kids or family. We found that this was one of the main questions that folks had. And this clearly shows that the participant is reading the material as you would think of somebody reading the material, right? So you're doing it from left to right, you're showing each of the lines, and then you'll see they actually look at the picture and they look at every single face in the picture. The heart rate here is about 82.5. It's slightly elevated, but it's, you know, doesn't indicate the person's really in distress. We didn't have any skin reaction, and honestly, we didn't really see much skin reaction at all, mostly because my lab is fairly cold, and so I don't think that we were really going to see too much there. Now, to give you an example, here's the control. So it's the same title, the same type of information about what to do. You can see they use the words children. There's long sentences in each of the each of the bullets, and I'll give you a sample here. So when you don't see anything, it means that they've looked completely off the page, and now they're coming back to it. So they're able to kind of start with the title, and you'll see they will start to look at each of the things, and then they're going to start to look away, and then they look back, and then they look away, and then they'll come back to it. Now, what we found a lot was that when you presented somebody with this much text, it just overwhelmed them. And so they would just sit there in the lab and wait until they thought that it had been enough time to tell us that they were done with that slide before they moved on. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of heartbreaking to watch this. It was hard to watch folks because it's so obvious that they're having problems with the material. In this case, the heart rate, and this goes on for like 3 minutes, I won't show you the whole thing. The heart rate here is much higher, it's 97 beats, so it's about 15 beats higher than the intervention participant. And in this case, this participant probably is starting to feel some stress because we're putting this in front of them. Here's another example. This was, will my food and water be safe? Another concern for folks. If a dirty bomb would go off, and this is the intervention. So again, you see similar to the first one where they're really looking at it like you would think someone would be reading it. They put them in a plastic bag and seal it twice So they kind of go back and they read it a second time. And similar to the other one, they also look at the picture and they look at a variety of the different food sources there. Here's the control. So in this case, this person kind of begins with the first paragraph, but kind of gives up pretty quickly. And they go back and try again and again. So they kind of go back to that first paragraph a number of times to try to read it and understand it. But you can see, you know, they're using unpackaged food, incident, radioactive dust. So they're using a lot of kind of lingo, jargon language, as well as just polysyllabic language that is just not going to be able to be accessible to them. We also did some qualitative tracking ratings. So we just looked at, you know, was this person really chaotic in the way that they were looking at something versus someone who was really tracking information correctly? And we looked at 7 different content similar slides to see if we saw differences in the control and intervention groups. We definitely saw a statistically significant difference between the slides on what to do when you're inside, which, since sheltering in place was our main issue, that we were happy about that. We had a couple others that were closer to significance. They were kind of trending towards significance. We had, you know, very low sample size, so we think that they probably would be if we had a larger sample. If you look at pupil fixation, so this is how long does somebody have to fixate on something as it goes, you can see we had a number of things that were significant, meaning that the control group had much higher pupil fixations because they're trying really hard to read all of that material. Same thing with just the amount of time spent on each of the slides. So you can see these are all significant, and all of the control groups spent more time on every single slide. So conclusions, number one, you know, we felt that this was a really feasible tool to develop and test effectiveness of targeted risk communication messages, especially with low literacy groups. It really brought home to us, you know, seeing it, how much people struggle with written information and how important it is for that written information to be done in a way that is accessible to those folks. I think that, you know, moving forward, we're looking, I'm doing a project right now where we're looking at eye tracking with food labels and trying to compare the new proposed food label with the old food label. You know, my guess is we're not going to see any difference in those. But I think that, you know, using some of these commercial marketing techniques can be really important way to try to understand how better to make these communication materials. And that's me, so if you need it, have any questions, please contact me. Thank you. Right. So, you know, I don't think you can completely with eye tracking show that somebody was reading something, but I think, you know, when you're looking at those two, you can see pretty clearly that somebody is tracking material like you would be reading something versus the other ones that were kind of like, okay, I'm looking at it, and that's probably what I'm doing, but I'm not really reading it.
So there are indications to suggest that a person may be reading versus just looking at it.
So the heart rate variability, we're actually doing that analysis now to see if we saw differences in heart rate variability over the time where they sit down to the time that they're done. In general, we saw this trend towards having higher heart rates in general, kind of an average heart rate in those who were in the control group versus the intervention. But maybe next year I'll have all of the data for the heart rate variability to show that that emotional component was also there. That's right. Yeah, they were randomized into the control. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the analysis with heart rate variability to see if we can standardize that to see if there's truly a difference in how they changed over that period of time. And if one group was more likely to experience an increase in their heart rate versus another. So that was an interesting process, definitely, was how do you write something at a sixth grade reading level to talk about radiation. What we found, and I think the perceptual mapping really helped us with, was that we didn't need to get into the nitty-gritty details of different types of radiation or those kinds of things. It really was, what do they need to know if one of these things goes off, and what's really the risk to their health or their family's health. And so what we tried to do is stick more to that, and I think that's part of the problem with some of the CDC materials and National Radiological Association materials, is they go into this really specific detail about radiation that, I mean, I don't really need to know that either, right? I don't think any of us really need to know that. We need to know if, you know, if something happens in the French Quarter today, what do we need to do? And that's what we really tried to focus on.
All right, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.